Hello and welcome to another Sustainable Wine Roundtable podcast. My name is Tom Outram and I'm the Operations and Partnerships Manager of the SWR. And today I'm delighted to be joined by David Gates, Senior Vice President of Vineyard Operations at Ridge Vineyards. David, good afternoon. How are you?
Good, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining. It's been quite a trip to get to you in Montebello. Perhaps we could start with you giving us sort of an overview of where we are situated and the history of Ridge Vineyards.
Yeah, we are in the Santa Cruz Mountains. We're in Santa Clara County. It's an hour south of San Francisco. We face the bay, so we are up right here, 2,300 feet. So we overlook the bay. We look down on Stanford and Palo Alto, Stanford University on one side, San Jose and all of Silicon Valley to the south and east. Today, especially, it's a beautiful day. When we're done with this podcast, if we walk out to the point, you'll be able to see the city, San Francisco, the new Bay Bridge that you're going to be driving across soon,
right.
And Oakland. I mean, it's spectacular when it's clear like this. Just clear, cold weather.
It's perfect. I know you get some fog in the summer, so I feel quite lucky to be here at such a time to see your surroundings. David, perhaps you could first start with giving us an overview of your sustainability practices at Ridge and some of the sort of initiatives that you're involved with.
So we have 140 acres here in the Santa Cruz Mountains. It's all organic. That is about 9.5% of the acreage total for the Santa Cruz Mountains. So the Santa Cruz Mountains is a large geographic area, but lots of small little vineyards scattered all about. It's about 1,500 acres total. We've got a big chunk of that here on Montebello Ridge. All of our estate acres at Montebello are on this little mountain here. It's beautiful because it's up, most of it is up above the fog line, like you talked about, the inversion layer. So it's warmer summers, and we'll talk about that later. Warmer nights, great sunshine, yet that fog does cool off the afternoons as it lifts and bursts. The other part of our operation is up an hour north of San Francisco in Sonoma County, in northern Sonoma County by Healdsburg. So we have Litton Springs Winery there and Litton Springs Vineyard. Vineyards that are in Dry Creek Valley, which is an AVA, famous AVA in Sonoma County, and then Alexander Valley, where we have our Geyserville vineyards. Those are predominantly Zinfandel-based wines that we make from there. We do a little Rhones like Syrah and a Syrah Grenache Mataro that we love, and Petit Syrah, which we consider a Rhone grape, even though it's really not grown in France. It was bred in the Rhone region in the mid-1880s and found a great home here in California as a complement to Zinfandel. On its own, it does really well also. So that's kind of what we do. All of those estate acres in Sonoma are also certified organic. And we started that process, I'd say, the early part of the aughts. And then in 2008, we said, okay, we're going to go for it and start and do step by step. So we did all of our ranches, a few acres. And by 2011, we had probably 50% of our acreage certified organic. And then in about 10 years, we added the rest of it step by step. As we got more comfortable with it and were able to work out some of the kinks.
What were the key drivers for starting that conversion to organics? And what were some of the challenges you faced in that conversion period?
Yeah, so the key drivers to going organic, I would say marketing was very much a part of that. You have to remember, back in the 2000s, you couldn't really talk much about sustainability. The National Organic Program, which is what drives the organic world in the States, was focused on vegetables, really. Food that you would eat, maybe a little bit of wheat, but not much. I'm mostly vegetables, because that's what people were looking at. Well, that's not the case in Europe or even Canada, and especially not in the UK. And we've always exported. We started in the late 60s exporting wine. That's always been an important part of our portfolio. We're seeing that if we wanted to keep selling wines where we thought they had the most impact, where were the head sommeliers, where were they really pushing wines, where were the best restaurants, the best wine shops? They were looking at, okay, what are your farming practices? How are you making the wine? And so we've always had a history at Ridge on the winemaking side saying, okay, we do use some modern techniques, but really our winemaking is based on traditional methods that were employed in the 1800s, early 1900s. Farming, not so much, because we were using herbicides. We were using some synthetic fungicides. And so we were looking at that saying, well, you know, maybe that's not the best thing, because especially on the fungicides, well, we'll start on both of those, because on the fungicides, it's great. They promise the world, just like penicillin and modern medicine, Western medicine promises the world. And it works great for a while, but then bugs and critters and fungi, they are adaptable. We were already seeing lots of resistance developing to those synthetic fungicides. And so I thought, okay, on the fungicide side, it was a no-brainer to convert. What it does is it shifts your economics a little bit, where you spend about the same for your fungicide control. And I also have to say, California is a great place to grow grapes because it's basically oidium or powdery mildew that we have to worry about. Botrytis we worry about a little bit, but that's only if it rains, and it usually doesn't rain very much.
Not today.
No, at harvest. It typically doesn't rain much at harvest. It's not easy to grow grapes here because of our economic climate, but it's easy, really, compared to the East Coast, compared to Europe where it rains in the summer. That was easy. We could spend about a third of our money on the fungicide itself. So sulfur is the backbone of our program, and there's some biologicals that we use. And then the other two-thirds was spraying with the time and tractor time, because they don't last as long, right? There's no residual, less residual. So you have to do more applications, use more fungicide, more product, but it's sulfur and whatnot. As opposed to synthetics, where you spend two-thirds of your money on the actual chemical and then a third of it applying it, because supposedly it lasts for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and it does, but maybe not really. You're really seeing that lately, where there are a lot of different fungicides. Mildew is very much resistant to, and it's moving around. And we can talk forever about that.
Do you share this sort of information between different vineyard managers? Do you collaborate and try and keep up to date with the latest issues?
Oh, absolutely. But the insidiousness of oidium is it's on little ascospores that are what spread it. Well, conidia spores are two different types, but they're very lightweight and they spread by wind. Okay. So we have a little vineyard in the heart of Alexander Valley, our Witten Ranch. It's 36 acres. It started converting it, transitioning in 08. It's been organic since 2011. So in 2018, we did a little sniffer thing. We put out these spore traps all around in conjunction with our chemical operator, their chemical manufacturer that sells us our material. He came up with this spore trap. So we put it out there to try to see if we could pinpoint where our infections were coming. And as an aside to that, they were looking at chemical resistance in strains of mildew. And so they thought, okay, here's a vineyard that's been organic for many years. Let's take when mildew hits it, we'll find out what resistance there are, and every single resistant strain of mildew was existing in that vineyard because it was coming from all around. In order to really effectively manage mildew resistance with synthetic fungicides, you have to have everybody in a big block doing the same thing, and that's not going to happen.
Cooperation isn't there.
No, it isn't. I'm happy because sulfur has been used in vineyards for several centuries and still works. You have to be very careful with it with your people, but it works really well.
And we're sitting here looking down onto Silicon Valley. What have you taken from that as an industry in terms of technology, and how have you sort of applied it in the vineyard?
There's a lot of technology out there, and it's a lot. So, and this is my thumbnail sketch, but Silicon Valley Tech thought process is, let's look at new ways to do things. So they throw a lot of ideas out there, and typically you'll have several different companies chasing the same idea. And so we get hit up all the time for a new way to look at weather stations or weather sensors, or how you can cobble them together, or how you can looking at your weather and predicting where you might need to do your sprays and stuff. And there are some great models out there, mostly developed by UC Cooperative Extension, University of California researchers, that work really well. And then it's just a matter of what works for you as a vineyard person and what you're interested in. And so, we do work with several companies that I like really much, but they have to be practical and they have to be applied and they have to have the same philosophy of growing grapes that we do, which is try to make the best wine you can from it and not try to push your vines too much. And that's kind of simplistic language, and we can go into the weeds on it, but that's kind of what we do because we have a pretty unique site here and the wines that come out of here are amazing, and we don't want to do anything to upset that balance.
And how are you experiencing climate change, and is it affecting how you approach your viticulture?
It is. It's funny because our vineyards in Sonoma County are much warmer than they are here at Montebello. They're less impacted by the climate change that we've seen in the last, I've been here, this will be my 35th vintage. they're much less impacted than we are here at Montebello. And partly that is because they're in valleys. The way the weather systems work in California is there's the Humboldt Current, the very cold water right off the coast that produces fog that San Francisco is so known for in the summertime. You know, the coldest winter I ever spent was summer in San Francisco. That's a Mark Twain quote. And so that fog goes into those valleys and cools it down at night. So the diurnal curve is very cool in the mornings and then it gets very hot during the day. And that continues. Well, those cool nights are great for the vines, and that hasn't changed as much. What has changed, we'll have these pretty intensive heat waves when the wind shifts and the weather comes from inland out and keeps the fog away. Mm-hmm. Things can get very hot. Mm-hmm. We've seen that almost every year now for the last 10 years. And it was very rare back in the 90s or the early aughts. Here at Montebello, it's a little bit different because we talked about that inversion layer. I used to say that it was the only reason why we can get Cabernet Sauvignon ripe here at Montebello, because this is a very cool spot. And it's those warm summer nights that allow it to get ripe. Well, those warm summer nights are now becoming very warm. They're, instead of being 70 degrees Fahrenheit and then getting maybe 90 degrees during the day on a hot day, the lows are staying in the 80s. And then they might go up to the high 90s or early 100s during the day. So it's putting a lot more stress on the
vines. Less of a buffer.
Much less of a buffer. So in fact, there's a term, it's called a vapor pressure deficit. It's basically the amount of atmospheric demand on a plant. And that's how people figure out how much water to give plants, especially annuals when they're irrigating, to keep them healthy. So you replenish the water that they're using so that they don't wilt and die. Typically in Sonoma, the atmospheric demand will skyrocket during the day where it's so hot. But then at night, it goes down to zero or sometimes below zero because it's cool enough. Mm. And then the vines can kind of rehydrate. At Montebello, it never gets quite as high as it does in Sonoma. But instead of it being zero, it's like 2, and it might go as high as 5. Those are relative numbers, but the relativity is that it never cools off enough so that the vines can recover. The grapes, when they become ripe after veraison, when they've turned color, they have little stomates just like leaves, but those stomates lose their ability to regulate. So they're open, they're wide open. If they're not able to recover at night, they keep shriveling up, they keep losing weight, and they keep exacerbating their ripeness level, even though it's not really ripe. It's just concentrating because they're losing water. It's dehydration. So what are we doing for it? We're actually irrigating more now than we have. We can't irrigate much here at Montebello because we don't have water to do that. So we're trying to really be strategic, and we have some partners that we're working with to look at when we should irrigate. And then it used to be that we would pull leaves, especially on the morning side or the north side of the vines, in order to promote good flavor development and for disease prevention too. But lately we have not been pulling leaves, and that's something we're going to do. And we're also, so there are a couple spots where it's more of a western exposure because we're on a mountain. We have exposure all aspects. And even Cabernet, which is a pretty tough grape, if it's facing west, it can really get hammered by those heat spells. And so we're going to look at shade cloth, which is pretty common in other parts of California, especially as Central Coast, and more so in some of the warmer spots like the northern part of Napa Valley, Alexander Valley, and Sonoma County. People are doing more shade cloth. We're going to look at that. So that's a couple of the things we're going to do to try to combat that.
It sounds like you're always comparing both sort of what's happened in the past, but also looking forward in terms of what's to come. How far in advance are you thinking in terms of where you buy your grapes and where you plant your new vineyards, and how much is that in your day-to-day?
It's not necessarily day-to-day, but we have yearly planning meetings where part of what we do is review what we've done for the year, and then also look at short-term goals and long-term goals. And that always comes up in long-term goals. And then we have some reality checks maybe a couple more times in the year where we kind of discuss things. And so as to how they might relate to what's the future. Right now, we're in a wait and see pattern for Sonoma County. We love Zinfandel. That's 60% of what we do is Zinfandel. So it's kind of the engine that drives us. But we also want to make sure that we correct for any warming that happens. And there are a couple ways that we're doing that. We like mixed vineyards. Lately, we're kind of going back to the future, right? Or the future is the past. If you look at a pre-prohibition, and that's a whole other issue we could talk about.
We do another podcast.
Yes, exactly. but they're always mixed plantings because they didn't make Zinfandel, they didn't make Cabernet, they made red wine. They were knocking off old European names, like they'd make a Burgundy or a Claret. That's what they made, and they were mixed. They maybe were mostly Zinfandel, but they had other things in them, and those vineyards show that. They'll have a mix of other varieties, and so we've been doing that to great success in our recent plantings at Lytton Springs and Geyserville. What we're doing currently is we're kind of shifting that mix a little bit, so we have some more whites that we'll plant in. We'll go up to 5% whites that will have higher acid. We'll go more with Carignan because that carries its acidity as well. That's the problem that we have with Zin in warmer areas, is it can lose acid. So that's kind of what we're looking at in Sonoma. At Montebello, we're still committed to Cabernet for Montebello as the backbone, but we're planting more Cabernet Franc, and we're also doing more Petit Verdot. Those are two of the blenders, and maybe a little less Merlot. Okay. Or we're choosing our spots with Merlot more carefully so that it's maybe only east facing or north facing.
Because it's more vulnerable to
it is.
Heat pressure.
Yes, the grapes are a little more delicate with Merlot, and bloom time weather is very crucial with Merlot. It can be very susceptible to shatter, melange, I think it's called. Yeah. A Cabernet is a little tougher that way, and it blooms a little later, right? So all of that.
And I think that's something that's being experienced in Bordeaux. They're planting less and less Merlot due to those factors. And obviously they've introduced 7 new grape varieties to build in resilience. Are you looking at other regions for learning opportunities in that context?
Yes, we are. We have moved down. We've always made grapes, and not always. We made grapes since 1967 down in Paso Robles. They were Zin. Right. And we still do that. We still use a great vineyard there, Benito Ducey's vineyard, whose nephew Mike is now running it. But we're also, I think it's been 5 years ago, we decided that we loved what Tablas Creek was doing in Paso Robles with Rhone varieties. Been a big fan of that. And I've always thought that Grenache Blanc would do really well. So we got talking with our marketing team and our production team, talked with our marketing team, and we said, well, let's try it. So we found some Grenache Blanc, and it's been fantastic. That is a great variety, along with Picpoul Blanc and Bourbalanc and some of those other varieties that have proven to grow well in warmer, harsh environments, southern France. They've done really well in California, and there's a big future for them. So we're looking at that, and we might plant some up in Sonoma. You never know.
So some exciting new projects and potentially new wines to look forward to.
Yes, always. Yeah, you can't. I like playing with things, right? One of the great joys that I've been able to do in the last few years was look at these old vineyards, these pre-prohibition vineyards that we have, and pull out some great old varieties that we then sent to get cleaned up of virus, because they're all dirty with virus, and then reintroduce them. So we have one vine at Lytton Springs that's California's oldest Pinot Noir vine. Of all things, there's a Pinot Noir vine.
Deserves an award.
Yeah, exactly. So we have a little bit of that planted to see what it will do. We also have some neat little varieties that are from these old ancient field blends, like Becklin, which is a grape from the Jura, makes a light, high acid red wine. We have St. Macaire, which likewise gives an intense, bright acid red wine. We might plant a little bit of that at Montebello to see how it does. And then some other weird ones, like Mortau is its official name. It's known in California as Cabernet Pfeffer. And there's some beautiful old plants of that in Cienega Valley by near San Juan Batista and back in the canyons there. It does really well, and we like that as a blender. But oddball little varieties.
There's a growing interest in old vines from South Africa to, I know, in Europe and Italy, and it sounds like there's a sort of resurgence in old vines as a way of marketing wine.
Yes, absolutely. The Historic Vineyard Society, I'm one of the founding members. I'm a director on the board, and we're all over that. We love it, and that's our basic premise for the Historic Vineyard Society. Is what can we do to promote these beautiful old vines and the wines made from them so that they can stay in the ground as long as they can. And so that vineyards that are being planted today or that are maybe 30 years old will become historic vineyards as well in the future if they're done well, planted nicely, and survive whatever catastrophes, economic
woes. That's what we have to hope for.
Yes, everything that's in the future, you never know, right? I love old vines just because I'm very fortunate enough to grow some and have been able to work with these vineyards. Like one of them is right on the hill above us. These beautiful old Cabernet vines were planted in 1949. To be able to be their steward for a few years is pretty amazing. And to be able to plant some vineyards and hopefully have them live half as long would be great.
And just to finish, you've obviously been involved in the California wine scene for a few decades. Looking forward, what gives you hope for the future with all the sort of doom and gloom that we see in the media with the news about climate change and the issues it brings? What do you look forward to in the next coming years?
California, I think, is at a crossroads. The coastal vineyards, as long as they have enough water, I think that we'll be okay. I worry about the big valley, the San Joaquin Valley. There really isn't enough water. We have to make a choice in California. What do we want to do with our water? How is it going to be distributed? And how much are we going to keep for food production? And I consider wine food. That's a big issue. And how much goes to fish and the environment and how much goes to cities? It's still about 80% of the water in California that is in the federal and state projects goes to agriculture. And that's what it was 40 years ago. There are a lot more people in California than there were back then, but everybody's using a lot less water. And we're also mining more water from the state, and it's not sustainable. We're seeing that in the, you know, the whole Colorado River Basin is just horribly overdrafted. But California...
What's the positive note, David?
Yeah, positive note. So, but California, the North Coast, I think we're okay. I see great potential on the edges of climate change. So in the Northern Hemisphere, it's in the northern parts of areas. Okanagan Valley, I think there's some amazing grapes coming out of there. Anywhere in Oregon, it seems like you can pick spots. In California, it's go to the coast. But you have to be careful because that's very delicate land there. In the southern hemisphere, again, it's going south. Get to the extremes, and that's where you can do well. And I mean, look at the UK. It's not just sparkling anymore. There's some really nice still wines are starting to come out of the south of the UK. That's a benefit of climate change, I think. That's where I would leave it. And I think that's positive.
I think there's the reality of the issues, and we need to address them as a collective group. But there's hope for the future with potential to bring new varieties and new regions to the industry.
Absolutely. And I also would go back to old vines and old vineyards. And, you know, there's a great resurgence. In fact, there's a great article in the American Press on Mission or Pais. So those grapes, they're bulletproof. You know, you can grow them pretty much anywhere. If you still want to grow grapes in an area where you don't have any water, well, that's a variety that, and you can make really good wine from it if you handle it correctly. And there are a lot of young, energetic winemakers and vineyard managers that are doing that. So that's always good. It's a nice renewal.
Well, it's been really special to spend some time with you and time at Ridge and to try some of your wines. We will leave notes in our podcast channel of the work that Ridge are doing. And if you'd like to get in touch to find out more, please do let us know. David, thank you for keeping up the good work, and we look forward to working with you at some point.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me.